So I've been listening to this this voice over Christmas. It's been accompanying me through all of Christmas, Christmas dinner, Boxing Day, all the time I should be with my family. I've been listening to this particular voice, and I'm really happy that this the person behind this voice is sat with me now. It's Ken Davies from the Fred the Head podcast. It's good to see you. How are you doing?
I'm well, Chris. How are you doing?
All right. And we've just done a little chat getting to know each other and all that, and we figured out we've got tons in common, actually.
Yeah, we have. We both come from kind of musical background, don't we, and playing in bands and stuff like that. And I think you're doing it at a far higher level than I am. but it is, it's good to talk to people who've had similar experiences of that, because it's, I think we're a breed apart, really, aren't we? I think people playing bands.
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, we'll get into this as we start talking, but I think there's certain synergies between being in bands and making podcasts and being involved in projects and all those sort of things that takes a very, like, the same sort of mindset, you know, the same approach and the same way of doing things. So
yeah, it does. It's a weird thing, because it's a mix, really, of kind of discipline, because people don't realize there's a lot of discipline in playing in a band. There's a lot of discipline in actually developing a podcast, but it's also obviously massively creative as well. And it's that weird intersection of where creativity meets discipline, I suppose, is what makes good things happen in a performance kind of setting. And and playing in a band and making a podcast, at the end of the day, is a performance in many ways, isn't it? It is, particularly in terms of music.
Yeah, 100%. So, Fred the Head, in a nutshell, as much as that's possible, what is that about? You know, to just sort of. You know, to ease our listeners in, I suppose, is what is it about first?
Well, Fred the Head is a person in the sense of that's the name that's been given to a body that was found in Winshill in March 1971. That body was tied up and buried. So he was killed and he was buried. Now, I first came across this about four years ago, and when I was living close, and I thought it was an interesting story, and I was digging away to find out what happened, who he was, who killed him, what the circumstances were. And there were no additional information. There was no additional information about who killed him, who he was, or what the circumstances were. And I thought that was really strange. So there's an unidentified man in 1971 who people still don't know who he was, killed by someone, and people don't know who that was. And I kind of made it my life's work ever since to find out who he is and what happened to him, because at the moment he's in a grave with four other people in Sleeping Hill Cemetery. But there's a story there, and he clearly one day needs a proper burial and a proper ceremony, and his family need to know that we found him.
How did you discover that story, that Fred the Head story? Because as many people I speak about, because I'm from, you know, the sort of Swadling Coe, Gresley area, and what you're talking about is just over the water there in Burton-on-Trent, Winsall, State Mill, that sort of area. And a lot of my friends that come from there, they all know about Fred the Head, and I didn't. And they, so, you know, how did you discover about Fred the Head?
Well, I've always been interested in history, local history. So when we moved to Newton Solney, where I was living at the time, I was looking around at local history, you know, going back to the Anglo-Saxons and all these people. Just interested in what had been there, because, you know, there'd been stuff on the site of Burton for, you know, thousands of years.
Yeah.
And I was just generally looking through the historical records of things and just came across, really absolutely accidentally, this case in the newspaper in 1970 about this poor person that had been found. And then something weird happened. There always has to be a kind of a switch. Because that was me... okay, interested in the story, told a few people about it. And I'm at work one day, about 3 months later, and there was a particular person who found the body, a fellow called David Nathan, who's still around, who I've got to know quite well. And I mentioned this person's name, and somebody said, oh, I know him. I said, no you don't. He says, no, I do know him, and I can put you in touch with him. I said, are you... sure, why would you know? Anyway, it transpires, he did know him, and he gave me a telephone number for him. And I'd been thinking about podcasts, because I was into podcasts, and still am, and I was thinking about whether there was a story here. Well, there clearly is a story, but whether that story was something I could tell. And I thought, well, I'm going to ring him up.
Yeah.
And I don't know what gave me the balls to do that, to be honest. So I rang him up, said, look, you don't know me. I'm a complete stranger. But could you mind telling me about this body you found? And everything went from there.
And that was it, that David Nathan.
Yeah, then he told me about what happened.
Mm.
And then I kept finding other people that linked into the story he told me. And it really became a Agatha Christie
yeah.
kind of thing in real life.
Yeah.
And once you're down that path, and once you fall down the rabbit hole.
Yes, yeah.
You're down the rabbit hole, yeah. and you're going to have to dig your way out.
Yeah.
And the only way of digging your way out is to find out other routes and other people and talk to them. And eventually, after about a year, I'd just spoken to so many people who were relevant to it. You know, I did know more about it than kind of anyone else at that point.
Yeah.
And therefore, I needed to start telling the world about it.
Yeah, yeah. That's brilliant. And from that initial conversation with Nathan David, I've got to get David Nathan. Sorry. So from that initial conversation, you said, you know, having the balls to make the phone call, that's something that I've noticed through listening to your whole podcast, that you've had to develop that skill, you know, in terms of, you know, through work and through your life, you've probably already got that skill. But the idea of ringing a total stranger to then go, this is what I'm doing, and can you help? And most people do.
That's the really weird thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I hadn't really developed that skill, by the way, before I started doing this, in the sense of ringing a stranger to say to them, do you mind telling me about your ex-husband,
yeah.
your brother, or your uncle?
Yeah.
Because I think he might be involved in a murder.
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah, how'd you do that?
They don't teach that anywhere. And and weirdly, there's only one person put the phone down on me.
Right.
Which, you know, maybe is a clue in itself. But the other hundreds of people have been really, really good. I think the way... I didn't know I could do that. And it forced me to do this, this investigation forced me to do it. But I think you have to deal with it in an incredibly sensitive way.
Yes, yeah.
I think you also have to be very open up front about why you're doing it, that, you know, there is a story about a poor person who's been killed, who probably has family, probably may have children, certainly has got some connections that we owe it to to try and get the true story and give him his own name back.
Yeah,
because he isn't called Fred. Now, actually, if it turns out his name is Fred Head, I'm going to be really pissed off.
Yeah.
But it's very unlikely. So he'll have a real name. Mm. And, you know, all what this is all about, really, is trying to give that person back his real name.
Yeah, no, that's great. And so, I mean, and the thing I'm trying to do is, you know, not give too much away during our chat and our podcast, because really what we want to do is to encourage people to jump off this podcast and, you know, listen to yours and listen to the whole thing with Fred the Head and stuff like that. But it's taken you around the world, hasn't it? It isn't, you know, we talk about Winslow and State Mill and, you know, local area that we're both kind of based in and around, but this thing isn't just a Burton story, is it?
No, it's not a Burton story because, of course, over 50 years, and this person was probably killed, and on the podcast you'll understand how we know this, probably killed sometime between 68, 69 or 70.
Mm.
And therefore, in the intervening 52 years, people go all over the place. They don't all stick. Unfortunately for me, they don't all stick around in Winslow. They go literally all over the world.
Mm.
And so one of the, I suppose, more interesting parts of the podcast is trying to track in the world where people who were in Winslow in 1970 are now.
Yeah.
And not only tracking them down in terms of where they are, but then talking to them and trying to explain to them why it might be worthwhile having a conversation. And, I mean, that's been a fascinating journey. And it's a journey that, you know, continues to this day. And I think part of the reasons why I think people like the podcast is this kind of thrill of the chase aspect of it.
Yeah.
that people, we don't know where we're going to end up next, or where the next episode is going to lead us to, and what interesting character we're going to unearth that we then need to talk to. So, yeah, it's been a very much broader kind of geographical range of people I've spoken to than I ever imagined it would be.
And there's not such a thing as objective truth or straight truth, is there? There's a lot of perspectives and a lot of stories and a lot of memories, but humans inherently are flawed in that department. And, you know, how have you dealt with that?
It's hard. It's really hard. And in fact, there's no easy answer to that.
Mm.
You know, I thought, and I was wrong, that memory was solid and concrete. And if someone told you something happened, you could be reasonably sure, if they knew that person, that it did happen. That's not true.
Yeah, yeah.
Memory is fluid, is the way I describe it, in the sense of different people who knew the person, all knew the person well, and you ask them a particular question, you will get a completely different answer from all those people.
Yeah.
And it's very, very difficult, therefore, to verify what is true. Doesn't mean it's impossible, because, you know, I use a lot of actual records, physical records of where people were at a point in time to track them down.
Mm.
And you can normally, by kind of having a cross-referencing people's memories to those documents, you can normally get a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been surprised, really, at how, in a way, it's not unsurprising, because if we're asking someone of what was happening in 1969, you know, the chances of people getting that mixed up with something that happened in 1973 are pretty high all this time. Yeah. And remember, most of the people that we speak to on this are getting on, you know, my age and older, and therefore, you know, time takes its toll on precision of memory. But in a way, that's one of the interesting things about the podcast, is because we do have to try and pick our way through lots of memories to try and deduce what the picture is.
And connect those dots, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that one of the big, you know, actually like out loud sighing disappointments that I've been listening is when you've got something which feels like, right, really hot. You know, it's like a real nice bit of juicy information. And then you go down and you find out even the name is totally different of the person.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and there might actually be a fragment or an element of truth in there somewhere within the story that's been told, but they're not even the same names, or they're not even, you know, the memories have somehow been mashed up, or, you know, there's some kind of creative storytelling going on, or whatever it is. But I've, you know, there's a couple of times I've been listening to it and going, oh, that's amazing. Wow, listen to that. You know, without giving too much away, there's a conversation with a medium fairly early on in the podcast series. And I was like, whoa, this is ace. And then you go, and then you uncover that actually it might not be true, or it might be, and you just don't know. And, you know, a couple of times I've out loud gone, oh, God.
I imagine what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It starts with an F. And it's true. But in a way, though, every time you work out something's not true, it takes you closer to the truth.
Wow, yeah.
And I'm not bothered about finding stuff not true. I like to find that stuff not true. I'm not interested in stuff that's not true.
Mm.
And it's good to be able to say, okay, I've really, really dug into that.
Mm.
And I can spend episodes digging into a fragment and say, well, no, that's not true. Or it's very unlikely to be true.
Yeah.
And therefore, we can put that to one side and concentrate on the other things which may be true.
Mm.
You know, doing something like this after all this time is like picking pebbles up on a beach. I mean, you are going to pick up 1,000 and one of them will reveal the truth.
Mm.
And so therefore, just moving past one of the 999 is no issue for me.
Yeah. But you seem to relish in that really exhausting every avenue to make sure that actually there is nothing in there. And, you know, some people might drop that ball a little bit sooner, but you really do make sure, no, that's absolutely not.
No, it's really important to do that, because just as you were saying earlier, people's memories are liable to be not precise.
Mm.
That doesn't mean there isn't a grain of truth in it. And there might be a grain of truth that's being remembered through a prism of inaccuracy.
Wow, yeah.
And
that's pretty well put.
But it is.
Yeah.
And therefore, I don't want the prism of inaccuracy to mean that I don't recognise the grain of truth.
Yeah, yeah.
And so therefore, even if it sounds outlandish, I want to prove to myself it's outlandish before I say, all right, let's put that to one side.
Yeah.
Now, but that's... But I think listeners knowing that I'll go to that extreme to prove or disprove something, I think gives people confidence that when I do say something in this,
yes,
people will say, well, if Ken thinks there's something in this,
yeah,
there might be something in this.
Yeah.
Because there's been plenty of times, many times, where I've said, I've gone right down the rabbit hole on this one, guys, and... I don't think so.
Yeah.
And I think it's only if you're prepared to do that amount of investigation and talk to the number of people I talk to that people get confidence in that.
Yeah. No, that makes a huge amount of sense. And I suppose so much so that what it seems like from again, listening as you've gone through is that actually there's been a bit of a family built around the podcast, and the relationships that you've made aren't just... those kind of, you know, transactional relationships, but they're actually about working together, really collaborative relationships.
Absolutely no question about that. And, you know, I didn't expect that. You know, when I started this off, it was just me against the world, really, in terms of trying to solve this case. But it's not like that now. And obviously there's a Facebook page called Who is Fred the Head, which is not run by me. It's run by a guy called Neil DeVille, who's a great guy. And, he launched that podcast. He launched that Facebook page before I started to release the podcast.
Mm.
And in fact, when I was about to release the podcast, I noticed that there was this page and got in contact with Neil and said, look, Neil, you don't know me, but I'm doing a podcast on this. Do you mind, rather than me create a Facebook page for the podcast, do you mind if we work collaboratively?
Oh, doesn't that make so much more sense?
And rather than
trying to be competitive
interest in that. So, do you mind if I use your Facebook page to let people know about the podcast? And he was great about it, and always has been great about it. And so that Facebook page became really certainly the social media front kind of page of the podcast. So, and through that Facebook page, and the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people are on it now from all around the world, that's been a great source of help, because lots of people have helped who have come across through that, and it's very much a collaborative effort now. It's not me. I mean, I suppose it's me on the podcast, so people associate me with it. But around me, I'm pulling help from loads of people all the time, and it's great that they provide it.
And it sounds like as well from some of the phone calls you make, not only. Again, as things sort of progress through the story of the podcast, it starts off being that quite awkward, I'm Ken, I'm doing this, is it all right if we talk about this? And actually, it comes to the point where, let's say, someone like Zoe in Australia really enjoys the conversation with you, and, you know, you've actually got a friendship there almost that's happened as a result.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. In fact, there are people on the Facebook who I discovered through doing the podcast who are... now, you know, collaborative members of Facebook. They're part of the story.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking of people like Joseph Jenner and Mo Tomlin, who are on the Facebook page, who are, they're part of the story, a big part of the story. And I discovered them in about episode 7, episode 8, when I was really going down a particular rabbit hole on someone. And they've become part of the community and, you know, very, very important part of the community. So it is one of those circumstances whereby people have kind of joined along the journey, along the way almost. And, you know, dare say if we're doing this in 12 months' time, we're on podcast 50, there'll be a load more people on there who we don't even know exist yet,
who are
going to join the journey and hopefully take us forward.
Brilliant. And from that, I suppose the question is, how has the because you've got to kind of curate that, I suppose, that community, and how How difficult is that? You know, do people sort of overstep the mark with anything, or is it? Yeah.
It's tricky because before this, I tend to be someone who works kind of on my own.
Mm.
You know, small businesses and or just me doing things and particularly when you're doing something as close to you as this, i.e., you know, if I was writing this as a book, I wouldn't be doing it with 800 other people.
Yeah.
I'd be doing it myself.
Yeah.
When you do a podcast and something like this, you are doing it kind of with 800 other people because they're all on the Facebook page putting their view about it on there. And there are certain people helping me in doing this. That's a tricky thing to do because I don't want to get down the road of being like a manager of people
doing this.
I'm no interest in that at all. What I tend to find works best is that if I've got a particular problem, I'll give you a very good example.
Mm.
A lot of the evidence, a lot of investigation that I do involves looking at records of births, marriages and deaths, and tying people together, where they were, who their mum was, all that kind of stuff. I like to get second and third opinions on that. If I find out a particular conclusion from that, I like other people to go through the same process and say, well, actually, I think it's this. Or, oh, yeah, you're right about that. I get the same answer. I like to have people help me do that.
Yeah.
And luckily, I've got some great people who do help me do that.
Mm.
In terms of the direction of where we're going, what do I do next? Who do I talk to next? What do I deduce from what I've been told? Rightly or wrongly, I like to keep quite a tight control of that.
That makes sense, yeah.
It can't be a free-for-all. It has to have some kind of structure.
Mm.
And I try as much as I can, having never done this before, of course, try and give it that. It's a journey without maps, I describe it as.
Yeah.
I try and at least develop what the next two steps are going to be.
Yeah.
And then we'll take it from there.
No, that makes sense, yeah. And I think it's important that's maintained because otherwise, you know, as I'm learning as we go along with what we're doing, even with our circularity project, you know, people, a habit that I have is to go, let's just see how it goes, you know, and everyone can help and it'd be amazing and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And actually, people don't want that. People quite often want, right, well, I really want to contribute. Just tell me what you want me to do.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's right. The other thing you mentioned earlier, actually, I think before we were on air, about the idea of people having kind of confidence in that you're doing something by a particular time and with regularity and delivering that exactly when you say you're going to do it.
Mm.
And that's one of the things that we really, really try to do with this podcast. And in order to do that, it sounds a bit dictatorial, but you've got to be a little bit, no, I've got to do it by then. I need to know that by then. And because if I don't, it can't get it in the next podcast. I need it for now. So it's, whilst the collaborative and networking aspect of what we've done has been absolutely fantastic, and we would have got nowhere near how far we've got to without it. I've got to say that.
Mm.
I have to try and marry that with this kind of editorial thing.
Yeah.
And it's a hard balance to strike, and sometimes, you know, I probably go too editorial, too dictatorial. Sometimes I can be too loose and say, oh, that's a good idea, let's run with that. And I think, actually, we shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Because it's taken us away from the direction of travel that we were going in. So, as you'll know, when I started episode one, I did start this with no skills whatsoever of investigative podcasting. I've had to learn it on the fly.
Yeah.
And that's all been part of the learning journey, really.
Yeah, no, definitely. And actually, you know, as someone who basically binged it, you know, or all the episodes within a matter of a week or a couple of weeks, you can hear the confidence develop throughout the journey. It's incredible by the end of the last one, I was on the edge of my seat going, what? You can't stop there. It's amazing.
Yeah, but when I listen to episode 1, 2, and 3 now, I kind of think, oh my God. you do, because you relax into it.
Yeah.
And of course, getting used to your own voice is really weird at the start.
Yeah.
Right? I don't really sound like that. And but over time, you kind of that you forget about that, and you do relax into your style, and you relax into talking to people. You get better at telling the story. Mm. I think all those things happen naturally.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, they should happen. You should get better at what you're doing more than once. And that's kind of where we've got to, really.
Yeah, yeah. And is there anything, you know, asking it the other side of the sort of question base, is there anything that you feel at the minute, you know, is missing or that you'd like some more help with? Or is there anything like that? Or is it a matter of everything's kind of where it needs to be right now and we'll just see how this bit rolls out? And
Well, yes, there is, in the sense of I want to talk to as many people who were around Winsill, Stapenhill, Burton in the 1960s as I can. I never tire of talking to people who are around then, because it's only by talking to people that we'll get to the answer on this.
Yeah.
There's no other way. It's going to be someone who says something that matches with something somebody else said, that matches with something somebody else said. Mm. We're going to be able to triangulate that and say, well, that means that happened. Now, that's only achieved by talking to people.
Mm.
Records and what's in the newspapers and births, marriages and deaths only get you so far. What people remember is really going to be the key to this. So, I probably have 4 or 5 conversations every week with people who are around at the time, and 4 out of them 5 won't really, at least at this point in time, doesn't give me things that I think, that means that then. But 1 out of 5 will say something that I think, oh, hang on, I've heard that before somewhere.
Yes, yeah.
So in terms of what do I need, I just need to talk to everyone who was alive in Winsill, Stapenhill and Burton in the 1960s, particularly if they're in their 60s or above, because they will remember this.
Mm.
And they'll remember people who may remember other important things. So, it's all about that, really.
Fantastic.